Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Voters within the Tulsa Public Schools District will go to the polls next Tuesday to vote on a $38 million bond issue devoted to classroom technology, safety, and security. A look at schools across the district shows a wide disparity in the student-to-computer ratio. At some schools, that ratio is about 3-1. That's on a par with the surrounding suburban districts. But in other schools, that ratio is high as 13-1. The bond will address those disparities. In addition, the bond issue will provide funding for sprinkler systems for some of the district's oldest schools and provide for more secure entrances and exits. Joining me to speak about a wide range of issues is Tulsa Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Keith Ballard. Today we'll visit about the bond issue as well as state funding for Oklahoma schools, the state of the district after the first year Project Schoolhouse, the district-wide consolidation, and several other topics as well. Dr. Keith Ballard joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Dr. Ballard, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. It's good to be with you this morning.
Tulsa district voters will be going to the polls on May 14th
right.
to examine a $38 million bond issue, which is set into, I guess, three sections: classroom technology, first and foremost, but you're also doing some security improvements
right.
like fire sprinklers and some enhanced security.
Yeah.
Tell us about this bond issue.
Sure. Well, when I started the year, I had some distinct goals in mind. Technology wasn't really at the top. One of the things that I do is I have a lot of advisory councils, and early in the year, my teachers' advisories and principal groups that I meet with, you know, really begin to talk about the technology. And I knew that we were deficient in technology. And so we really began to explore the possibility of doing a bond issue. And, you know, we had some bonding capacity available. I really just turned this over to a group of teachers and administrators in our IT department. And they really, really did a fabulous job on this. We have a bond development and a bond oversight, which is a citizens group, and they had some reluctance in the beginning, and they really asked us a lot of questions, a lot of tough questions, which was really good for us because we had to answer a lot of tough questions. And
For example,
what about the infrastructure? Because you can go out and buy computers, but there is a real lack of infrastructure. What about wireless? What about support personnel? And by that I mean personnel to support the technology that was going on in the classrooms. And a lot of these really tough questions really came from the teachers.
You can have all the technology in the world, but if
right.
you don't have an administrator, if you don't have an administrator to keep things running and make sure antivirus protection and all that sort
right.
of stuff, they're going to be junk. Yeah.
Finally, what I decided to do is I said, let's just put it out there to a blog and let's hear what people who work in the schools, let's hear what they have to say. We got hundreds of responses. I just received hundreds and hundreds. We read through all of them very carefully and said, well, let's craft a survey. Let's find out what people who are working in schools, teaching the kids, really think about this. We had 1,357 people respond, almost all of those, teachers and administrators. So we crafted this whole initiative around what teachers and principals are saying that they need in the classrooms. And then we had to take it to our bond oversight and our bond development committees and had several, you know, really strong meetings with them. And ultimately they approved it, took it to the board, and the board approved it. It's a start for what we really need to do. We have some money left from the 2010 that was allocated to technology, 2010 bond issue. We'll be utilizing that, and it will also be a big part of the 2015 bond issue.
What was the common thread from all the responses you received? They needed more technology, or there was disparities between certain classrooms, or what exactly?
Well, you've answered your question, and you're exactly right. We definitely needed more technology, and there really is a lot of disparity. Disparity exists because we have schools that have access to federal dollars that other schools don't. It wasn't intentional on anybody's part, but we just had a lot of disparities, a lack of infrastructure, old equipment, lack of support for technology. It was a great survey. If you want to know what people are thinking, ask them, listen to them. So I really thought that it accomplished a lot. And from that, you know, we crafted an overall technology plan that will be unfolded out in basically three parts. And by the time we get to 2015, we will have state-of-the-art technology. It goes without saying, it's in the best interest of our kids.
Yeah, and of course, as you know, with technology, it's not a one-time thing. It's almost ongoing.
Right.
Is the district positioned itself to have ongoing technology issues so that, you know, when the computers get to be 3 or 4
Absolutely.
Years and the hard drives are struggling to keep up, you're systematically replacing them?
I give huge credit to our IT department at TPS for all of the work that they put on this. They've just done a magnificent job. And the answer to that is absolutely yes, that we will have the dollars available through bond issues and we will be allocating dollars. As most of the public knows, we do a regular bond issue every 5 years. In 2010, it was $354 million. It'll be similar to that in 2015. And we have a technology plan in place. We will rely on those dollars to carry out that plan. And you're right, technology does become obsolete, and you need to stay on top of it. But the fact of the matter is, it's how kids learn today. It's how my grandkids are learning, and it needs to be integrated into the classroom, not just for the kids, but for those who teach as well.
Now, will the majority of new technology go to address some of the disparities? Because there was a Tulsa World mm-hmm. article which showed in your best classrooms, mm-hmm. you're about equal with most of the suburban district as far as pieces of equipment per classroom student. But on the low side, it's 10 times worse, 13 to 1 or something like that.
Great article in the Tulsa World. And yes, disparities exist. And yes, we're going to even all of those disparities out. The important thing is that we now know exactly where we are and we know where we're going. And this bond issue would just be a great start to really taking care of infrastructure needs, taking care of obsolete equipment, taking a huge step toward equalizing the access to technology from our kids.
Now, another smaller portion of the bond will be security issues, fire sprinklers. Is that an issue for school? I mean, we had a school burned down.
We did have a school burned down. We're up to code in all of our schools. We were up to code at Barnard. But the fact is those 11 remaining wooden structures built between 1910 and 1920 do not have sprinkler systems in them. A sprinkler system wouldn't have saved Barnard, but a sprinkler system at the exits, particularly the front exit, would have made it safer. And now's just a very good opportunity to do that. I mean, you think about, wow, I wish we could do that after the Barnard experience. And now we can do it. And so about $4 million of the bond issue would go towards sprinkling. And then another $3 million really goes toward ensuring that we have safe exits, safe entries. We're very meticulous. We're very careful about that. We had a lot of security money in the 2010 bond issue. But security's on everyone's mind. So I really give huge credit and thanks to the Bond Development Committee who spent a lot of time thinking about this. You know, the things that are the best initiatives are those that come from the ground up. Teachers, principals, parents, citizens, all coming together and saying, okay, here's what we can do with what we have right now. And so I think they make this $38 million go a long ways.
After the Newtown tragedy, there's been a lot of rhetoric about what you do to make a school safer. What's your ideas about the best ways, the most prudent ideas to make a school safe?
Well, Rich, first of all, you know, you make entrance into the school. You make that extremely safe. And you have pass-through systems where, you know, people have to identify themselves. I mean, I can't even walk up to a school and open the door and get in. I have to hit the button. And I have to identify myself, and that's how it ought to be. We know in Newtown, however, that a window was shot out and entry happened in that manner. I am an advocate of security guards. We have security guards in 20 of our schools. I think if I could write the prescription, I would say that you know, there ought to be a certain amount of money, a substantial amount of money allocated for each school, and we ought to take a look at that particular school. We ought to make our decisions on what would be best, but it really does start with the capability of entering. Now, I think I've made myself very clear on this, and without you even asking, I will say I'm adamantly opposed to teachers carrying guns openly. I have two children in kindergarten this year, and I don't want their teacher with a gun on their hip. If you really think that through, it's really not an option. It's not an acceptable option.
Has that been an issue with the Classroom Teachers Association at all?
No, except that they're not in favor of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they made it really clear, the multitude of teachers. And as I said at the outset, I have councils that I meet with on a regular basis. Nobody on any of my councils was in favor of that. So I think, you know, again, entrance, exit, really thinking about, you know, the kinds of windows that you have, all of those kinds of things, which we're doing. And then where possible, I think having a security guard in place is a good idea.
Let's talk about some other issues. The bond issue comes up on May 14th. The $38 million bond issue goes before Tulsa District voters. And my guest today is Dr. Keith Ballard, the superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools. This has been a very big year for education anyway, from the legislature to testing issues to to lots of things. But let's talk a little about the state funding issue. Legislative leaders come up with an extra $74 million, I think. For the purposes of Tulsa Public Schools, that's an additional $4 million. But when you go back to everybody says you can't look at what happened last year. You have to look at what happened, where we were in 2008.
Right.
And we still have not come even close to recovering where the educational budget was in 2008. Yeah. And I think, what, you're still $18 million down from 2008?
Well, we're not even close. Yeah. In 2008, I became superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools. We've lost $22 million since that time, just out of the general fund budget. During that time, we did have some stimulus money that came and went. And we have clearly shown and demonstrated to everyone, including the state legislature, that not only are we down that $22 million, and we've had to do a lot of things to make up for that, the cutting eventually of 225 teaching positions, of another 130 positions. I mean, we have clearly detailed exactly what we have had to do to make up for those cuts. In addition to the cuts, the population in Oklahoma schools is up by well over 30,000 students. There have also been several unfunded mandates. You know, at a time when we were going through the recession, we took the cuts. And in fact, we thanked the legislature for shielding education as much as possible in comparison to other state agencies that also really needed the funding. The dollars are back, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, because I am grateful that we got $74 million, especially in comparison to what other agencies got. But I would just say, from the state level, the dollars are not being managed like they could be. There's a lot of money that is available. There's money pouring into the Rainy Day Fund, which I support. It is fully replenished, but there continues to be money going into the Rainy Day Fund, put into other projects. The fact is that we've lost well over $250 million statewide since 2008. I would love to replace some of those teachers. You saw the recent article in the Tulsa World about a music teacher in Tulsa Public who's teaching in three different buildings. We need to hire music teachers. We need more teachers. Teachers haven't had a statewide pay increase for probably about 8 years. You know, let me just tell you some recent experiences.
And I should stop you on that because when you say there's been no raises for 8 years, your cost per teacher goes up every year because of contractual basis based on experience. There's a stepwise.
That's right.
And so your labor costs for any given teacher goes up a certain amount every year. It's a modest amount, but it does go up.
You are just exactly right. I mean, it is a modest amount, and that's the very point I was going to make. Other than step increases, there hasn't been a significant increase. I was at an event Sunday night here in Tulsa. I was out at about 9 o'clock, and a young lady was working at this particular event, and she's a teacher. Yeah. I was approached by a teacher at a restaurant. I was with my family Friday evening.
He's your server.
Introduced herself. She was our server.
Yeah.
I met a young lady at Hideaway one night. You know, she was working at Hideaway late at night. They ought not to have to work two and three jobs in order to make ends meet. The legislature could absolutely have done a better job with the dollars. They need to make up for the over 30,000 student increase, for the unfunded mandates. We want the money to go to the classrooms. We want to increase the number of teachers that we have. We don't want a teacher teaching in three different buildings. I've already said this at the outset, Rich, that I don't want to sound ungrateful, because we are pleased that education got $74 million. But we really do need more attention paid to education.
Give us a sense of how those cuts have affected you over the 4 years. What was the average classroom size in 2008, and what is it today?
Can't tell you exactly what the average classroom size. I will just say that we have many classrooms right now in the 30s. I will say that the utilization of
that
technology—
That flies in the face of House Bill 1017, which we passed 23
years ago. Long forgotten. 1017 is long forgotten. the passage of this bond issue would really help teaching in classrooms that have larger student populations in it. Right now, you know, my concern is class size. That absolutely is. But it's other areas where foreign language, where we have a teacher at Memorial who's volunteering to come in on a 0 hour and teach. So it's not, it is class size, but it is also about having more music teachers so that we can have more evenly distributed offerings across the district. We really do need to address that. And all of this comes at a time when I believe that Tulsa Public Schools has gone through dramatic reform. When you take a look at our Teacher Leader Effectiveness Initiative, we have written a teacher evaluation system that is in use by over 500 schools in the state of Oklahoma. And we wrote it for Tulsa, but it is so good, and it was written in such a collaborative manner that it's being used all over the state. And we have exited ineffective teachers, and we have a real focus on reform and having an effective teacher in every classroom. We're doing the work with the Ed Labs group out of Harvard. We're doing a Promised Neighborhood. We approved a contract with Reading Partners. For mentoring. We have a very strong emphasis on literacy in K through 2, the Read 180 program. We are doing better. People in Tulsa love Tulsa Public Schools. They really do. We have a huge amount of support. Look at the bond issue in 2010 that passed at a time of deep recession with 77% yes. They just want to know that we're wise stewards of the money. They want to know that we are reforming Tulsa Public Schools in a way that all children will learn. And I'll remind you, we closed 14 schools.
That was my next question. So what has been the, you know, you've had a year with this under your belt. How do you feel that Project Schoolhouse did with the consolidation? A lot of trepidation from a lot of parents.
Sure.
Yeah, I live in a neighborhood where the neighborhood school was no longer a choice because of a shifting school boundary, and it was an unknown school, and there was a lot of trepidation going into the year. So what's been the reaction?
Well, Project Schoolhouse was largely accepted because of the grassroots effort that we brought to it. I mean, we had so many hearings in the beginning through the process. We listened very carefully. There were a lot of voices that were involved with it. We made ourselves a much more efficient school system, not just financially, but instructionally. We were the district of choice, and we had a lot of half-empty buildings out there, and we had kids running all over town looking for a better deal. We have a moral and an ethical obligation to ensure that every school in every neighborhood is absolutely terrific, that every school is meeting the needs of kids, and we closed down a lot of those lanes of running around all over town. We're no longer the district of choice. Rather, we shall provide a quality education for every child every day without exception. You know,
are those transfer requests down this year?
Yes. Yes. The transfer requests really ought not to be to just go to another school that you think is better. They ought to be for choices, for magnets. Tulsa is hosting its first ever national education conference ever. Magnet Schools of America is here in Tulsa with over 750 people, with an $800,000 estimated financial impact on the city. They are here in downtown Tulsa. Now, why do you think Magnet Schools of America chose Tulsa Public Schools? They chose Tulsa Public Schools because 6,000 of our kids are going to magnet schools today. 15% of our population are going to schools in a magnet program. We have splendid magnet programs, and those ought to be choices that are available to kids, along with the three charters that we sponsor. You have to have those kinds of choices in the urban setting, but people ought to go because they're interested in what that school has to offer, not because of the failings of schools in their neighborhood.
Let me talk about the magnet program. Does the district have anything in place to track how well they serve those students once they've graduated and maybe they're moving on to either a professional track or a vocational track, from the magnet program?
Well, let me say that through technology, we're doing a much better job than we were 5 years ago in tracking students. We think making good decisions every day based on data. That's why we need a good statewide testing system. But no, we're not doing much to track students who graduate. We need to iron out all of our problems, and we need to do a good job of tracking kids who are going to school here every day, and maybe one day that's something we can get into.
Yeah. My guest today is Dr. Keith Ballard, and you just sort of previewed my next point, which is, you know, a couple of weeks ago we had this testing regimen where the servers failed and kids were having to start their tests three or four times. And these are pretty important tests. These are for a high school senior. This is, that test could well determine whether they actually are able to graduate, correct?
Absolutely correct. It's just unacceptable what happened with the state testing system. It's just unacceptable. You couldn't have said it better. There are huge stakes in today's testing system. And you want to take a look at what happened with this testing debacle. The state superintendent decided that she wanted to change testing companies. That's fine. That's her prerogative. But it is also her duty to ensure that the testing company that we go to is one that is valid and will meet the needs. And, you know, she made her recommendation to go with that company without getting approval of the State Board of Education. And so once, you know, legal folks started looking at that contract, they said, wait a minute, you didn't get approval of the State Board. So they had to take it back. The fact that it was the highest bidder really doesn't matter to me, because sometimes we've not always taken the lowest bidder on something. You need to take quality. But the fact that it was done in that manner and then had to be redone and put testing off, and that meant that we had to move the writing tests, which are typically given in February, had to push it back up against the other testing. And it's been shoddy from the beginning. I mean, we've had poor delivery of test materials. It has not been a good system. Those are things that we tolerated, even though we didn't like it. But you know, for the system to have collapsed like that, 3,000 tests invalidated. But even think about tests that weren't invalidated. Yeah, I had one parent say to me, my daughter, who is in the, I think, seventh grade, might be eighth, came to a 49th question on a 50-question test, and her computer crashed. Now, you can't make up for that. Oh, yeah, you can take the test the next day. You can extend the testing window, and you can take the test again. Rich, I went to pick up my cleaning on Saturday, you know, wearing my old grubby sweats, taking my dog to the track, and the lady there with my sunglasses on immediately recognized me and started telling me about the impact of the statewide testing on her son. This is huge on people's mind, and it is a clear failure of the State Department of Education, who strongly prefers high-stakes testing, and I'm all for testing. I think we overtest today, and I won't get into that whole huge discussion. I will just say that in my opinion, the State Department of Education did fail in this endeavor.
So what's likely to be the ramifications of this?
You know, some of it we don't even know. Some of it we don't even know. I think that by extending the testing period, we'll get all of the kids tested. But we really don't know. And, you know, we make a lot of decisions based on test scores. We're not pleased with the test scores in Tulsa. We're doing everything we can to improve those. So I really don't know what the ramifications will be. I do hope that they continue to improve the flawed formula for the A through F, another initiative of the state superintendent. Not that I'm so much opposed to the A through F, although I think it's pretty difficult to figure out a grade to hang on a school. But I do know, along with over 330 superintendents in the state of Oklahoma, that the formula we used last year was absolutely flawed. I just would say that there ought to be broad-based input into decisions that are made. I think the way we did Project Schoolhouse, for example, I think the way that we've done our bond issues speaks to the value of really involving people in the process.
The impact on students who have had to take the test over and over, you have a lot of high school seniors, you're about to run out of days at this point. If they don't pass a required test, what's the impact on them?
I've been an outspoken critic of the punitive nature of the end of instruction test. I do believe that students ought to have a body of knowledge. But I think when they don't demonstrate that on a test, I mean, let's think about it. That's a test given on any given day. Some kids test well, some kids don't. I think there ought to be more authority given to the local Board of Education. You get to vote on whatever board member you want. I think we have a great Board of Education in Tulsa, great boards of education in the suburbs. And I think there ought to be more local discretion given on what happens when kids don't pass that test. I'm not saying a free ride, but I'm just saying we need to think about these are kids who are impacted by this, kids who are ready to go into the military, kids who have been accepted into college. And I will say it is my belief that the State Department of Education has had a very punitive attitude towards students who don't pass the EOIs. Let's think about kids. Let's think about what it feels like to be a 17, 18-year-old a student just getting started and what we're doing to their lives.
Yeah, I think you pass the classes to graduate,
right,
and yet the test says you can't graduate.
Right.
That's kind of says failure.
It's a problem.
Yeah. My guest today, Dr. Keith Ballard. One last question that has to do with the disposition of Barnard, the Barnard site. I know you had an
right.
offer that has been pulled back. What is the district's plans for this property?
Well, first of all, I don't think that you make a decision on the sale of property without consulting the neighborhood, and we have a pretty good record of doing that. We had a great neighborhood meeting at Roosevelt whenever we were thinking about selling that to the people that want to put in the statewide performing arts charter. Frankly, I think that we were not as thorough as we should have been, believing that some of that vetting had been done, and it hadn't. We had a nice offer, but when it became apparent to me that we had not worked with a neighborhood in a historic area of Tulsa, historic preservation society, then I just said we're starting all over with a clean slate.
And any chance that might be another school? You might build a new school at some point.
Not at this point.
Yeah.
No, it's not an area of town where, you know, we have that population. We just need to make sure that we have worked very carefully with the neighborhood. And, you know, I regret that it happened like it did. But I also am the one who pulled back and said, wait a minute, we're going to start all over on this. And so we're starting all over. With talking to Barnard neighborhoods. And, in fact, we had a meeting yesterday with some of the neighborhood associations being represented. It will have a good ending. It will have a good ending because we do have a sacred responsibility to the community and to the people who live in the community to make sure that they be heard and are involved in these kinds of important decisions.
Well, Tuesday, May 14th is the day for a $38 million bond issue, which will look at classroom technology, fire sprinkler systems, and some security for Tulsa schools. And I assume, is this a 60% vote?
This is a 60% vote. Every bond issue in Oklahoma is a 60% vote.
So you need a supermajority to pass.
That's
so
right.
That's something for voters to keep
right.
in mind.
Very important that people get out on May the 14th.
All right. Dr. Ballard, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Rich. I appreciate it.
Dr. Keith Ballard is the superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools. Tulsa Public School voters will go to the polls next Tuesday, May 14th, to vote on a $38 million bond issue. And, of course, as we mentioned, that requires a supermajority, 60%, for passage. For more information about the initiatives of Tulsa Public Schools, visit tulsaschools.org. For information on the bond, visit yes4tps.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.